May what I speak, may what you hear, be in the name of the God of love, who creates, redeems, and sustains every single one of us. Amen. Please be seated. Some verses from our first reading this morning, part of the book of Revelation, chapter 1. Grace to you and peace from Jesus Christ, the faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead, and the ruler of the kings of the earth. You know, it's amazing, isn't it, what little moments stay with you in life. You know what I mean? Little incidents which somehow sear themselves into your memory and which you never ever forget. I had one of those moments a few years ago. Let me tell you about it. A few years ago, I was teaching a confirmation class in another parish, and in the confirmation class, we had five teenagers, three girls, two boys. And on this day in this class, we were discussing what it means to be a child of God. A child of God. And I was explaining as best I could that being a child of God means that we have a dignity. We have a worth. We have a value which no thing or no one can ever take away from us. We are children of God. We are beloved, precious, unique. And then as a group, we started to discuss what that belief, which might sound rather abstract, what that belief might mean in our ordinary everyday lives. And so I suggested to the teenagers that being a child of God means, for example, that we are empowered to take a stand. We are empowered to take a stand against all those voices, all those forces, all those lies in the world which try to make us doubt our value and our worth as children of God. For example, I said, there is a great, big, horrible lie out there in the world which tells us that our value, our worth, depends. Depends, for one thing, on being popular. Depends on how many likes, how many friends we have on social media. Or even more perniciously, I suggested, there's a great big horrible lie out there which tells us that our worth depends on us conforming to some twisted, airbrushed, unreal definition of beauty. Eternally youthful. Utterly flawless, and above all, of course, impossibly skinny. It's a nasty, nasty lie, I told the teenagers, because the truth is, we are not our packaging. We are not our packaging. We are precious, beloved children of God. And no thing or no one can take that away from us. Well, I will never forget what one of the teenage girls, just 13 years of age, said next. I'll call her Annie. Annie turned to me and she said, "That's all very well, Darren. But it's too late. It's just too late." She meant, of course, that those nasty lies are so all-pervasive in our culture that even at just 13, she already felt herself to be caught in their deadly grip. "It's too late," she said. I always think of that confirmation class and what Annie said when we get to this day of the year, the Feast of Christ the King, because this feast is, above all else, the day when, by the grace of God, we take a stand. Today is the day when we say to those would-be kings of the world, the would-be lords of our lives, we say to them, no, you will not have my allegiance. No, I will not bow down before you. No, you will not sell me your lies, your dysfunctions and deceptions, because I ultimately have only one king, one master. I belong to Jesus, Jesus Christ. Boy, do we need a day like that, don't you think? A feast of Christ the King. We need a feast of Christ the King, first of all, in our world, I think. We need a day when we are reminded of the truth of who we are and whose we are. We need that in a world where, as Annie knew so well, we are bombarded day and night by warped ideas of beauty and perfection, warped ideas which have unleashed a global wave of despair among so many of our young people in particular. And we need a feast of Christ the King of truth, in a world, in our political world, where, as you know, populist demagogues are using all their skills to sell us alternative truths and to turn us against each other and turn us against those who might be perceived to be different. And most of all, in this week of Black Friday, we need a feast of Christ the King here in our Western consumerist society, where the king of consumerism and materialism and overconsumption and greed has so many of us in his deadly grip. We need a feast of Christ the King. And you know what? I think it's the same in our ordinary, everyday, personal lives. In our everyday lives, we face, each one of us, that choice of giving our allegiance to Christ and his values, or to some other lord, some other king, some other false god. Let me give you some examples. In my work as a priest, I have seen how the false gods of drink or drugs or addiction can become the lords of people's lives. In my own life, I have seen how the idol, the false god of constant busyness, unnecessary anxiety, and approval-seeking overwork, have tried to steal my peace and claim my allegiance. And in my ministry in parishes all over the world, I have seen again and again how anger or bitterness or plain old pettiness can become the dominant and controlling forces of our lives. In all of those situations, we must, by the grace of God, say no. No. God is God. Jesus is Lord. Christ is King. I choose to follow him. But that's very difficult. That, as Annie knew, as that little Annie knew, was very difficult. So what's to be done? How do we resist those forces, voices in our world, and sometimes voices internally in ourselves, which feed us lies and peddle us half-truths? How do we do it? Let me tell you another story. One evening, a wise grandmother told her granddaughter about a battle. "My girl," she said, "there's a battle going on inside of me and inside of you and inside of all of us. It's a battle between two wolves. One wolf is evil. He carries anger, envy, greed, lies, jealousy, despair. The other wolf is good. He shows love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, hope." "But grandmother," said the little girl, "which wolf will win the battle?" "That, my girl," she said, "depends. depends on which wolf you feed. So, in a few minutes, we'll do here again what we do here every Sunday. We will be fed. We will be fed. We will share a meal in memory of Jesus Christ, the true Lord of our lives, the true King of the world. In particular, we will remember that night before he died, when Jesus took some bread and wine and said, "This is my body, this is my blood." And that is the spiritual food that feeds our souls and nourishes our better natures. That is the spiritual food which paradoxically increases our hunger for God. And that is the spiritual food that builds us up, and helps us to grow into the full stature of Christ. It's not another product to purchase. It's not another political ideology to buy into. It's not another clever philosophy. It's not another slick marketing strategy. It's just Jesus. Just Jesus. The one who was fully who God created him to be every day of his life. Just Jesus, the one who triumphed over every would-be Lord of our lives and of this world by responding to their lies with his truth, by responding to their violence with his peace, and by giving his life away in love for us. And it's just Jesus, the one who did all of that with just the basic human equipment, a beating heart, two good hands, a holy vision, and some friends who could see that vision too, thereby showing the rest of us that such a life is not beyond our reach. Revelation chapter 1, verses 4 and 5. Grace to you and peace from Jesus Christ, the faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead, and the ruler of the kings of the earth. Amen. Amen.